handle the truth.
I am so sick of the media dictating the terms of the narrative in this country. I'm so sick of having to be apologetic for who I am. I'm so sick of people in middle America being called flyover country or slope-headed.
Conservative teabaggers.
And it's going to be teabagging day.
It's hard to talk when you're teabagging. Appreciate it very much.
It's so funny because the teabaggers, the one thing they hate is when you call them racist.
If racism is not the whole of the Tea Party, it is in its heart.
The hatred that Timothy McVeigh, that he had. There are plenty of people like that right now.
Listen.
I think you get the general tenor of this. It's anti-government, since this is highly promoted by the right-wing conservative network, Fox.
The left pits people against each other. Divide and conquer is the strategy. I don't want to live in that world. It is the exact opposite of E Pluribus Unum.
He said you were involved in a racial incident.
And what the left has stood for with political correctness is to try and get those with whom they disagree to shut up. And the Tea Party movement and Sarah Palin and Michelle Bachmann and Alan West and all the people that have gone out there against the mainstream media and said, you're going to call us racist? You're going to call us potential Timothy McVeighs? Fuck you. War.
Good morning. Good morning and welcome to Road Warrior Radio. You're tuned in live this Monday, August 30th, 2021 on the one and only Republic Broadcasting Network. And as always, thanks for coming along for the ride. It is a wild and dystopic ride. I'm just going to go through John T. Flynn's Roosevelt myth this morning. I have threatened to do that the last few days of this broadcast last week, and I think it's important, sort of vital and essential history to remind us that what is happening now is not new. In fact, it's just part of a coordinated plan. And we've just been conditioned to believe that all of this is perfectly normal. The American way of rugged individualism and leaving your neighbor alone to one's own proclivities is really sort of antithetical to central planning, and central planners don't like that idea. So enter the technocratic planning. Hayek told us about these things in The Road to Freedom, or excuse me, The Road to Serfdom. The Road to Freedom is the abandoned road. That's chapter one. And he starts, by the way, Hayek starts The Road to Serfdom, chapter one, the abandoned road, with a quote from Roosevelt himself, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, a program whose basic thesis is not that the system of free enterprise for profit has failed in this generation, but that it has not yet been tried. And my little footnote there, my own personal note, says, and still has not in succeeding generations either. So, the opening words of chapter one, when the course of civilization takes an unexpected turn, when instead of the continuous progress, and we got to define terms there, which we have come to expect, we find ourselves threatened by evils associated by us with past ages of barbarism. We naturally blame anything but ourselves. And is this happening now, dear comrades? Have we not all striven according to our best lights? Have and have not many of our finest minds incessantly worked to make this a better world? Have not all our efforts and hopes been directed toward greater freedom, justice, and prosperity? If the outcome is so different from our aims, if instead of freedom and prosperity, bondage and misery stare us in the face, is it not clear that sinister forces must have foiled our intentions, that we are the victims of some evil power which must be conquered before we can resume the road to better things? However much we may differ when we name the culprit, whether it is the wicked capitalist or the vicious spirit of a particular nation, the stupidity of our elders, or a social system not yet, although we have struggled against it for half a century, fully overthrown, we all are, or at least were until recently, certain of one thing, that the leading ideas which during the last generation have become common to most people of goodwill, and have determined the major changes in our social life cannot have been wrong. They just can't have been wrong, right? Don't we assume the same thing in this present age? We are ready to accept almost any explanation of our present crisis of our civilization, except one, that the present state of the world may be the result of genuine error on our own part, and that the pursuit of some of our most cherished ideals has apparently produced results utterly different from those which we expected. While all our energies are directed to bring this war to a victorious conclusion, it is sometimes difficult to remember that even before the war, the values for which we are now fighting were threatened here and destroyed elsewhere. So it's you know, that's a provocative opening to Hayek's Road to Serfdom, and basically says maybe we need to reevaluate, reassess the foundational tenets and premises on which we embark on certain courses. Thinking, really not even thinking, but just a sort of unconsciously moving forward, thinking or moving in a direction, thinking that, well, of course this is progress. So the Roosevelt myth. I think I'll start from the conclusion. I read this a couple of times last week, but not in its entirety. And so I think I'll do that. And then we'll dive in. You will be astonished. I was astonished. So John T. Flynn, The Roosevelt Myth, 1948. And sweeping changes took place, and we were sold one thing and we got another. Imagine that, because of the, you know, president's foreign policy advisors, the brain trust in this case, and so on. Those were the wizard. Those were the wizards with one foot on either side of the curtain, if you will. So from the end, the final two pages of John T. Flynn's The Roosevelt Myth. Of course, the war against Germany was won. America with her 140 million people, Russia with her 180 million, France, England, and the Commonwealth with another 100 million, with practically all the naval power and with the... And you think of... I think I was going to mention Bertrand Russell's words as an opening, because with all of these numbers, you think of... You sort of back up to R.J. Rummel's Death by Government, and from there I think you back up to Bertrand Russell's Impact of Science on Society, and some astonishing concepts. I mentioned that on Friday, and I thought I would throw that in as a companion to this discussion. So R.J. Rummel's Death by Government, I've talked about in the past, but Speaking of the numbers in World War II, another brief parenthetical aside, from Bertrand Russell's Impact of Science on Society, and again, you can find this excerpt. Jay Dyer threw this up on Twitter. When was that? March of last year. And so you think, you know, the timing and that those pictures that he took of those two pages, 103 and 104, of Bertrand Russell's Impact of Science on Society are still up. So March of 2020, March 23rd, 2020, what was happening last year? And Jay Dyer's little comment that accompanied the pictures of those two pages, Bertrand Russell in 1953, biowarfare is more effective for depop and social engineering than war. Impact of Science on Society, 103 and 4, and will lead to global governance. So, I think that, you know, pretty much says it all as we look back over the last 18 months. Pretty straightforward. And we've seen, you know, if you take that and you put it together with all of the, you know, the scenario planning and things that Johns Hopkins and everybody has done, all of the related groups and the just the smithing of these efforts, you know, the whether it's the strategizing and brainstorming that's been done at places like World Economic Forum, kind of right out in plain sight, and then the creation of the things in as a result of those discussions that are that have happened sort of out in plain sight, or, you know, Bill Gates TED Talks and related things like that. You know, again, Ralph Epperson, The Unseen Hand, the Abraham Lincoln quote that he opens the book with is telling, when we see a lot of framed timbers, different portions of which we know have been gotten out at different times and places by different workmen, and when we see these timbers joined together and see that they exactly make the frame of a house or mill, all the lengths and proportions adapted to their respective pieces and functions, I would say, because, you know, as you look at what has happened over the last 18 months, all of the groundwork and infrastructure that has been laid to do these things is, it's enormous and sprawling, and has happened over the last 20 years or so in particular. So we see that they exactly make the frame of a house or mill, all the lengths and proportions of the different pieces exactly adapted to their respective pieces, and not a piece too many or too few, not omitting even scaffolding. Or if a single piece be lacking, we can see the place in the frame exactly fitted and prepared to yet bring such a piece in. In such case, we find it impossible to not believe that they all understood one another from the beginning and all worked upon a common plan or draft drawn up before the first lick was struck. And that's what emerges, you know. Jay Dyer says, Bertrand Russell in 1953 said biowarfare is more effective for depopulation and social engineering than war and will lead to global governance. So that excerpt from The Impact of Science on Society, Can a Scientific Society Be Stable? Pages 103 and 104. So he's talking about this nonsense. He says the world will have achieved a new stability, but at the cost of everything that gives value to human life. And, you know, maybe now we call that the Internet of Things. Everything becomes a thing, including people. Are mere numbers so important that for their sake we should patiently permit such a state of affairs to come about? Surely not. What then can we do? What is to be done, comrades? Apart from certain deep-seated prejudices, isn't it funny how bad things are construed as prejudices in bad guys' minds? In other words, you know, reality is inverted. You think nature is beautiful? Well, that's a certain prejudice. Suddenly, a good thing becomes a pejorative. What then can we do? Apart from certain deep-seated prejudices, the answer would be obvious. The nations, you know, in other words, if you value life, for example, and you don't think that we should just engage in mass genocide, you know, valuing life, well, certain deep-seated prejudices. The nations which at present increase rapidly should be encouraged to adopt the methods by which in the West. Isn't it funny? Just as an aside, you know, if this really is a problem, I don't believe in this problem. I am not a Malthusian by any stretch of the imagination. I think the command that was reissued after the flood in Genesis 9, go forth, be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth. That's the anti sort of That's the anti-Malthusian mindset, I suppose. Or it's not really anti-anything. It's, you know, God didn't make mistakes. And he meant what he said and said what he meant. So the Malthusian contingent, though, says that we can't do that because we'll run out of resources. We'll fill the earth and, you know, then all of a sudden there will be starvation and all this kind of nonsense. So what if that were true? If that were true, then why are we going the opposite direction? If this, what Bertrand Russell says, the nations which at present increase rapidly should be encouraged to adopt the methods by which in the West the increase of population has been checked. Why not? You know, we had the Agricultural Adjustment Act that has basically destroyed farming. Why not reverse that and encourage farming instead of, you know, through the gentrification of certain places, farmland is, you know, we build these multi-use things on the farmland. Why not reverse that trend? We could. So Bertrand Russell, the nations which at present increase rapidly should be encouraged to adopt the methods by which in the West the increase of population has been checked. Educational propaganda with government help could achieve this result in a generation. Educational propaganda with government help could achieve this result in a generation. There are, however, two powerful forces opposed to such a policy. One is religion, the other is nationalism. The old nationalism, that is. I think it is the duty of all people who are capable of facing facts to realize and to proclaim that opposition to the spread of birth control, if successful, must inflict upon mankind the most appalling depth of misery and degradation. And that within another 50 years or so. Again, Margaret Sanger would be proud. I do not pretend that birth control is the only way in which population can be kept from increasing, Russell writes. There are others which one must suppose opponents of birth control would prefer. See how we, you know, you start arguing with the devil and all that you find is that you have wandered down this Machiavellian dialectical path of destruction. And that's what is astonishing to me. People who get sucked into this mindset don't seem to realize that this is all relative. This is relative in a dialectical sense. And so we need to get rid of those people. But who's to say that you're not the next? You know, Pastor Martin Niemöller's words, I think, are in full effect here. You know, they were euthanizing all of these people systematically these groups, and I didn't speak out until at last there was no one to speak for me. Stick around, we'll be right back.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing: knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
Here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we have been building our online store. Well, we have been focusing on bringing you the best talk show host in the country. Here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we also want our listeners to have products they can use every day and in times of emergency. We have added new products each week to our store. Your support of this network, plus products at the best prices, is a win-win situation. Check out our new store. Go to our website, republicbroadcasting.org, and click on the online store located at the top of our website. Together, we can continue to grow RBN and help our listeners prepare for the future. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and click on our online store or call us.
800-724-2719, extension 3. 800-724-2719, extension 3.
Sunday, Monday, happy days. Tuesday, Wednesday, happy days. Thursday, Friday, happy days. The weekend comes, my cycle humps. Ready to race to you. These days are all
happy days.
These days are all happy days.
Welcome back. All right, so the conclusion of the excerpt, Bertrand Russell's impact of science on society, and then back to this technocratic planning nonsense. See, it's always the planning. Hayek was right. It's always the planning, the planners. There is a central plan. and there is a central planner. Beware the planners. So, Bertrand Russell writes, there are other methods which one must suppose opponents of birth control would prefer. You know, if you want to euthanize a bunch of people. War, as I remarked a moment ago, he writes, has hitherto been disappointing in this respect. But perhaps, but you know, again, R.J. Rummel, death by government, democide. I don't know that I would say war has been disappointing. It's astonishing to read these kinds of things. People actually write these kinds of things. But perhaps bacteriological war may prove more effective. That sounds like what the Project for a New American Century wrote in their Rebuilding America's Defenses back in September of 2000. If a Black Death could be spread throughout the world once in every generation, survivors could procreate freely without making the world too full. Who decides what too full is? There would be nothing in this to offend the consciences of the devout or to restrain the ambitions of nationalists. Isn't that interesting? I beg to differ. Continuing, the state of affairs might be somewhat unpleasant, but what of that? Really high-minded people are indifferent to happiness, especially other people's. Isn't that something? It's the Stoic way, right, dear comrades? And in the will to power, I think I commented on this last week, the will to power era, you know, that's kind of, that's it. You know, you become the hardened kind of person that Bertrand Russell describes of particularly the ruling caste. However, I am wandering from the question of stability to which I must return. This is interesting. Listen to this. There are three ways of securing a society that shall be stable as regards population. The first is that of birth control. The second, that of infanticide or really destructive wars. Do we have birth control? Do we have infanticide? Do we have really destructive wars? And the third, that of a general misery except for a powerful minority. I think we're tending toward that as well. All these methods have been practiced. The first, for example, by the Australian Aborigines. The second by the Aztecs, the Spartans, and the rulers of Plato's Republic. The third in the world, as some Western internationalists hope to make it, and in Soviet Russia. Isn't that something? It is not to be supposed that Indians and Chinese like starving, but they have to endure it because the armaments of the West are too strong for them. Of these three, only birth control avoids extreme cruelty and unhappiness for the majority of human beings. Meanwhile, so long as there is not a single world government, there will be competition for power among the different nations. And as increase of population brings the threat of famine, really, why don't we increase farming with population? National power will become more and more obviously the only way to avoid starvation. There will therefore be blocks in which the hungry nations band together against those that are well fed. That is the explanation of the victory of communism in China. And then this to conclude. These considerations prove that a scientific world society cannot be stable unless there is a world government. And so that's, I think, a good sort of premise to head back into John T. Flynn's The Roosevelt Myth. The Roosevelt Myth. And what was happening, particularly in that four-year period, 1933 to 36, was so radical that, you know, again, as Thomas McNeice, the assistant director of research to the Rees Committee, put it, it constituted a revolution. And that was not a statement he made lightly or in hyperbole. So we'll look back at that and look at some of the technocratic efforts of the day. Stick around.
You can't. can't handle the truth.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news, real talk, real people. Because you can handle the truth.
The reviews for Extendivite are amazing. Amazon customer: it's amazing. I just ordered my second bottle. In 1 month, my blood pressure dropped significantly. I no longer get chest pain after I exercise. The reviews are spot on. My target is to get off of BP meds, and if it keeps going like this, I see a light at the end of the tunnel. Amazon customer: Extendivite works great. This product has made my blood pressure and cholesterol stable. I highly recommend it. Amazon customer: excellent herbal formula. I've been using it to keep my cardiovascular system fine-tuned. Extendivite is only $69.95 for a 2-month supply. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com. That's HEARTDROP.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Are you sick of censorship? TLB Talk is the cure. TLB stands for Truth, Liberty, and Balance. We are the newest and most unique social media platform to hit the internet. We were built out of necessity because big tech, big pharma, and big brother are out of control. The only thing bigger than them is when we, the people, are united. With that vision, TLB Talk was born. Our battlefield is in cyberspace. The battle we're in can be won by clicks of buttons and voting with your wallet. TLB Talk has no hidden agendas, no corporate funding, and we do not sell, trade, or give away any of your information. Our platform runs off of generous donations of members and merchandise profits. So please, check out our site. It's the best around. And be sure to stop by our store. It's loaded with items that'll have you feeling a sense of member pride and victory. Come unite with us today at tlbtalk.com and join the social media revolution.
Welcome back. Bottom of the first hour of today's Road Warrior Radio broadcast. This Monday, August 30th, 2021. John T. Flynn, the Roosevelt myth. I keep wanting to say the Rockefeller myth. I don't know. It's a Freudian thing, I guess, maybe. So from the end, we got the numbers, you know. America, you know, of course, the war against Germany was won. You have all these numbers with practically all the naval power and with the choice of the Earth's resources against 70 million of the enemy. Of course we won. He's being facetious here, obviously. But at what price to our institutions? And then while the war was still raging, and as victory appeared, Roosevelt disappeared from the scene. The staggering debts, the larcenous inflation, the insoluble division amongst the victors, the appalling consequences of his fantastic surrenders to Moscow, all this is left in the hands of his successors. After the ballyhoo is spent, the fireworks extinguished, the martial music silenced, and the money nearly gone, leaving only the great spectacle of a disordered, divided, and bankrupt world. But that's what you do, right, dear comrades, to recreate a new order, you have to introduce some chaos, a little bit of chaos. On the moral side, let me say that I have barely touched that subject. It will all yet be told. But go back through the years, read the speeches and platforms and judgments he made, and consider them in light of what he did. Look up the promises of thrift in public office, of balanced budgets and lower taxes, of disbanded bureaucrats, of honesty in government, and of security for all. And so you read about this, you read about the promises, and again, there are echoes of things like Hayek's Road to Serfdom and Chapter 1, The Abandoned Road. Maybe there's a reason that when we embarked on this course based on these promises that we ended up in the exact opposite place that we thought we might end up. And so what are the lessons for today? So look up the promises of thrift in public office, of balanced budgets and lower taxes, of disbanded bureaucrats, of honesty in government, and of security for all. Read again the warnings he uttered to his own people against those wicked men who would seize upon a war in Europe to entangle them upon specious visions of false war abundance. Read the speeches, and now, again, now, as we skip forward to today, you know, George W. Bush is a hero and a darling. Eric Prince is on with Tucker Carlson. And as my grandfather used to say, everything old is new again. So read the speeches he made, Never, Never Again, to send our sons to fight in foreign wars. Look up the promises he made, not to our own people, but to the Chinese, to Poland, to Czechoslovakia, to the Baltic people in Lithuania and Latvia and Estonia, to the Jews out of one side of his mouth and to the Arabs out of the other side. That's that conflict. That's Pike's conflict, right? The Jews and the Arabs. That's the Third World War. Pitting political Zionism against Islam, or political Islam, as I would call it, which is Wahhabism or Salafism, which is Wahhabism on tour, and Deobandism. Who understands that discussion? There are some really, really intelligent, well-informed folks who don't realize that, you know, in the simplest assessment, Operation Cyclone recruited a certain type of folks and made them even more hostile. And again, PBS Frontline has done that series on this. They did the definitive series. What was it? November of 2001, just weeks after September 11, 2001, and. You know, it was titled Saudi Time Bomb? Question mark. You can still find that. And let me just look real fast and see if that's still there. Yep, Saudi Time Bomb, investigating the hidden undercurrents of Islamic extremism, its far-flung reach, and its threat to the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. They told the story, and they dug into Wahhabism and, you know, U.S. and Saudi officials and Middle East political and religious experts talk about this. And then there was the more recent update in that series, Confronting ISIS series, I believe, on YouTube. You can look up. They have that playlist. Saudi Arabia, Frontline at Saudi Arabia. So 13 videos, few pulled out. But this one's still up. Inside the awkward U.S.-Saudi alliance against ISIS. And the awkward alliance is, and they talk about it. So Saudi Arabia is creating groups like ISIS with their educational exports and things like that. The description of the video on YouTube on PBS, October 11, 2016, reads, "When ISIS began setting up schools to teach the next generation of jihadists, the terror group didn't have to start from scratch on its curricula. Instead, its members took to the internet, downloading PDFs and textbooks that had been put up online by Saudi Arabia's Ministry of Education, and that preach hatred for anyone who's not a member of the ultra-conservative Wahhabi branch of Islam." And they would say that's Islam. They would say Wahhabi branch of Islam is redundant. Wahhabism is Islam, according to these people. And even if you are some other, you know, you have some other, you belong to some other sect or whatever, that those folks are infidels to them as well. So continuing, the Saudis have since revised some of their textbooks, but it was a particularly awkward moment in the relationship between the United States and one of its closest allies in the Middle East. And it's explored as part of Confronting ISIS, quote-unquote, a new Frontline documentary from correspondent Martin Smith, delving into many aspects of the complicated U.S.-led fight against ISIS. Right. We are fighting them as we create them. You know, even PBS Frontline has exposed this from end to end, you know, over the last uh, 20 years now, in just a couple of weeks, right? Week and a half now. And before, you know, this was not a new thing, which was why... Not a new strategy, not an unforeseen plan, which was why Bill Cooper was able to tell us, warn us on, what was it, June 28th, 2001? They're going to blame something on this guy. Don't believe it. Don't fall for it. And by November, he was gone. And by November, even PBS Frontline had told us the whole story. Saudi time bomb. So, these lessons of history. John T. Flynn writes, look up the promises that Roosevelt made, not to our own people, but, for example, to the Jews out of one side of his mouth and to the Arabs out of the other side. But it wasn't him. He didn't formulate these ideas on his own. It wasn't in a vacuum. It came from the president's foreign policy advisors, and what of them? He broke every promise. He betrayed all who trusted him. If any escaped it, it was the British and the Russians, because they were represented by two strong men who, in dealing with Roosevelt, were inflexible realists who knew what they were about. But you know, that was all orchestrated from behind the pale of the curtain as well, right? Who played the games, because the man of steel was not his own man, and neither was Churchill, who was led by the prof and others. Inflexible realists who knew what they were about, who played the game with him, upon the basis of solid realism, as they should, who remembered their own countries and held him with iron resolution to incredible pledges. The figure of Roosevelt exhibited before the eyes of our people is a fiction. There was no such being as that noble, selfless, hard-headed, wise, and far-seeing combination of philosopher, philanthropist, and warrior which has been fabricated out of pure propaganda, in which a small collection of dangerous cliques in this country are using to advance their own evil ends. And I would submit to you, dear listener, that the same evil plot has advanced over the last 80 years. So, some excerpts from the book. Beginning perhaps in the chapter titled The Dance of Crackpots. The Dance of the Crackpots. If I can get it to cooperate, the book. So, it's difficult to know where to jump in because it really is, it just is sort of an enthralling read. Jumping in with these big bureaucratic plans, sweeping plans. Jump in at the California Authority for Land. It would be operated, so this plan, well, let me back up just a little bit to give a little background. All these big plans and people who had any sense were laughing at them. So, it began to look as if the printing presses would have to go to work, and this very well-founded apprehension exercised a profound influence upon the minds of businessmen who were being exhorted to expand and expose themselves to the dangerous gamble of inflation. Meantime, out in California, an almost incredible movement got underway. Upton Sinclair, an old socialist who had stirred America 30 years before with his famous novel, The Jungle, had been living in California for years. He was an intelligent and industrious critic of the capitalist system and a writer of amazing fecundity. Novels, brochures, pamphlets, critical volumes poured from his pen. Were published by himself and translated into every language in the world. He was a gentle, scholarly, deeply sincere man. Suddenly, this socialist amazed the voters of California by announcing himself a candidate for the Democratic nomination for governor against George Creel, a brilliant and courageous liberal journalist who was supported by the Democratic leaders for the place. Creel, an old Wilsonian reformer, had still harboring a chimerical faith in the laws of arithmetic and gravity, was soon to learn that he, a lifelong Democrat, was no match in a Democratic primary for a lifelong socialist with a platform for turning California gradually into a socialist heaven. Sinclair had a tremendous weapon. We were still in a depression. Isn't that funny how it lends itself to certain things in sort of reactionary fashion? Nobody seemed quite sure what to do about it. Sinclair capitalized on this. He told the voters he had a plan, and he was dead certain about it. He said, quote, "We can end poverty in California. I know what I am talking about. I am an expert in depressions. I have spent 30 years of my life studying them. I know what causes them and how to cure them," throughout the Federal Reserve and the robber barons. I digress. "And I tell you, the only way to do this is by my plan to end poverty in California," end quote. From the first letters in this plan, EPIC, E-P-I-C, The movement took its name. Creel says that overnight the people stopped talking about the climate and began to talk about EPIC. Like all the plans, it too was simplicity itself. There were in California 1 million persons unemployed by industry or starving on the farms. Also, said Sinclair, there were a great number of idle factories and idle farms. The state would put up the money to start up all the idle factories and the abandoned farms. The unemployed would be put to work in those factories, making essential goods for themselves and all unemployed persons. Others would be set to work on the idle farms, growing food and raw materials for the factories. These unemployed are now, he said, no longer profitable customers for those in private business. In fact, they are a burden, since private business must now provide the taxes for relief. EPIC would take all the unemployed off relief, hence off the backs of the self-supporting element and community. The state would finance it all with a bond issue. So, the planners hard at work. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Hey, honey, I'm home. I grabbed a newspaper on the way home. Look at all the news today.
Don't you know that all you're going to get in the newspaper is propaganda, twisted news, and false information?
Honey, this is a national newspaper. It has to be true.
Ha! For some reason, the majority of the population believe anything the mainstream media tells them. The newspaper doesn't give out the important attention of what's happening to this country and news that affects our daily lives. Say, does that newspaper mention anything about the North American Union?
No, not that I can see.
I didn't think so. You need to go to www.newswithviews.com, where truth is more important than political correctness. That's www.newswithviews.com. Hey, don't throw that away. We can use that in the birdcage.
Okay, move over. Let me start reading newswithviews.com.
The truth? Read all about it at newswithviews.com. Newswithviews.com, where reality shatters illusion.
Extendivite has proven time and again it really works. Here's a testimonial from Amazon.com. I am only 40, but I have put my body through hell working in manufacturing for 20 years. I recently started to notice a buzzing feeling along with a stuttering sensation with my heart. I had a full cardio stress done, which I passed. I decided to try Extendivite after getting the jingle stuck in my head. Halfway through the bottle, I really did notice a difference. After getting home from work, I would just sit in a chair for a few hours feeling like crap, and this stuff reduced that feeling along with heart discomfort to almost nothing. Extendivite is only $69.95 for a 2-month supply. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com. That's HEARTDROP.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Tired of being lied to by mass media? It's growing more and more apparent today that news is received less and less through standard media outlets. Even with a growing audience every day, RBN is beginning to direct more efforts into social media. Social media and the use of the internet is fast becoming the primary source of people for news, regardless of demographic. RBN has set out to provide some of the best news on the internet through republicbroadcasting.org and also has begun to use the tools to our advantage by way of social media. Republic Broadcasting is now operating a Facebook page to function as yet another avenue to have our collective voice reach new audiences across not only America, but across the globe as well. The Facebook page features not only news, but also an RBN player to listen to our broadcast. Get involved by visiting facebook.com/republicbroadcasting and liking our page and share it with your friends and family, because you can handle the truth.
Thank you.
Welcome back. What do we do in the face of crises and famine and so forth that have all been systematically engineered? Well, the planners will save us. Those who engineer and arrange us into these problems, they will save us. Don't worry. And this is, it's that absurd. It really is that absurd. One of the best examples that I give of this is the same suggestible, same folks who give us the bad ideas that get us into problems are the same folks who, you know, are leaned upon to give us more bad ideas to get out of the problems that they've engineered and arranged us into. So one of the best examples is, you know, the subprime contagion, so-called, was largely the result of suggestions that came from a group called the Group of 30, an international economic body that fancies itself or themselves the betters of us all. And so there was a steering committee that was led by none other than Paul Volcker. Five people. He was the head. I don't know if you can call any of those folks, including Volcker, Americans, but aside from Volcker, you couldn't call any of the other four Americans. And that is where this thing called the Volcker Rule came from. And if you used to be able to go to the Group of 30's website, group30.org, and on the front page there above the fold, they had Barack Obama talking about the Volcker Rule, introducing the Volcker Rule and Paul Volcker himself, and it was a brag. And so the mark-to-market accounting change, for example, came from these folks. And then, you know, the collapse, and then what to do about the collapse. Anyway, now the Group of 30 is talking about the opportunities. Read what the G30 members have been saying on the current COVID-19 crisis. The opportunities. Oh my goodness, what's the market doing? And you know, what opportunities emerge from this crisis? You know, crisis and opportunity. Two sides of the same coin, right? So, I wrote about that last April, Opportunities of Crisis, over at therewr.com, quoting Kennedy. When written in Chinese, the word crisis is composed of two characters. One represents danger, one represents opportunity. The danger signs are all around us. Opportunities of crisis. Right? Never let a serious crisis go to waste, say the arsonists. Rahm Emanuel. On and on. So, they create opportunities of crisis. So we'll talk about that. We'll look at the plans and the planners of a bygone era that laid the groundwork for today. Second hour coming up. Stick around. I'll be right back after this short break.
You're gonna wait till the cows come home to get your new ease-off drop-in lift?
What in the world is an ease-off drop-in lift?
Our ease-off is a new tool to increase production for your meat processing company that will get that whole hog or half a beef on or off your rail with our remote control.
That sounds great, but can I afford it?
Sure, and the ease-off installs fast. The effortless operation will reduce fatigue, speed up your line, and increase profits.
Okay, I'm convinced. Where can I get my ease-off?
Go to easeoff.com. That's EAZEOFF.com. And hurry, because we're offering free shipping for a limited time. Easeoff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too.
Aesop, LLC, 417-932-6419.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.